Can you imagine the level of a mind that watches wrestling?
The audience wants to see action, adventure, wrestling, and plenty of it.
Big men in tights, you know the drill.
Rammer Slammer.
Welcome to Rammer Slammer. I am Ben Flanagan, and we are just a few days removed from the inaugural WWE pay-per-view that they decided to call Great Balls of Fire. And you know what? It was really good. And I'm going to be joined by our good friend, the professor, Dr. Will Nevin, to recap it match by match and just for about an hour talk about what all we liked about a WWE pay-per-view, which is so refreshing and fun, and I think it's a really fun conversation, and it's just good to talk about a lot of the positive things that the company has going for it right now as a result of the latest Raw pay-per-view, which is arguably the best pay-per-view of 2017, I guess, if you don't count WrestleMania, or maybe you think it's better than WrestleMania. I don't know. But we're about to get right to it, and I want to give you a heads up that next week's show, whatever it's about, will also include an interview with Baron Corbin, Mr. Money in the Bank, who we spoke to on the phone not long ago as SmackDown makes its way back down to Alabama next Tuesday. I will definitely be there live to enjoy it, but before that, we're going to hear from Baron Corbin, again, Mr. Money in the Bank. He is still on his way up in the company, and it was nice to get about 10 to 15 minutes with him on the phone. Good conversation I think you're going to enjoy. So without further ado, here's my conversation with the professor, Dr. Will Nevin, about Great Balls of Fire.
This is Ben Flanagan, and I am joined now by our good friend, the professor, Dr. Will Nevin. Will, how's it going?
Pretty good. Happy to talk to all the slammers out there again.
Yeah, buddy. And so I want you to give me just a quick overview of what you thought of this ridiculously named pay-per-view.
This pay-per-view that makes you question WWE's marketing practices. I enjoyed the network special / live event / whatever we call pay-per-views these days. I thought it was memorable for a lot of good reasons, memorable for some bad reasons. But I think overall, I mean, I give it like a solid A minus. Which is a lot for WWE these days. I thought it was certainly better than Money in the Bank. I thought it was certainly better than the last Raw brand pay-per-view, whatever that was. The five-way match main event show. I really enjoyed it.
That's interesting. You know, yeah, I would call you a pretty tough critic of the modern product. So to hear you give it an A minus is I think very interesting, and it actually speaks to really the overall quality of this pay per view. Because you know, it's interesting, Will. I've been, like a lot of hardcore wrestling fans out there right now, I've been listening to my fair share of the Something to Wrestle With Bruce Prichard podcast and the latest episode that they have right now on Canadian Stampede from July 1997, that pay-per-view is obviously famous for a lot of reasons, but it's one that people consider one of the greatest WWE pay-per-views of all time. And first of all, people should go back, A, watch Canadian Stampede, B, listen to the Bruce Prichard and Conrad Thompson podcast about it. Both are really good. But I think it's interesting that I watched that pay-per-view, listened to that podcast, and watched Great Balls of Fire all sort of like in the same sequence, because we're kind of talking about WWE's B pay-per-views and the best that they've done with the non-sort of four-heavy pay-per-views. And Canadian Stampede is considered arguably one of the best of all time of those. And it's just really – it's always refreshing when in the modern era now – one of these B pay-per-views really nails it. And Great Balls of Fire was, I thought, excellent. It was just top to bottom really, really solid. And you're right, like, it's pretty close to being an A flat out. And there might be, like, one or two little hiccups here and there and nitpicks that prevent it from doing that and give it that A-minus status. But Raw has, I think, struggled to compete just from a strictly a storytelling and wrestling standpoint with SmackDown, which has been the superior product in that specific regard. But with Great Balls of Fire,
I want to jump in just to get on the record as saying that gender is very hindering, but I'll let you finish.
Okay. Well, so Great Balls of Fire, what the craziest thing about this whole, like, usually the pay-per-views are a lot better than Raw itself, and especially the build-up to the pay-per-views. But the build-up to Great Balls of Fire, pretty much, again, from top to bottom with a solid card all around, the build-ups were all pretty dang good. Like, they were all just classically designed, and the performers did extremely well in terms of selling their feuds, and the matchups made sense, and it all culminated with really good matches. I think some of the finishes were a little questionable, namely in the main event. I thought it was a little abrupt. I thought that the women's match was fantastic, but had a finish that might have been left a little bit to be desired. And maybe,
maybe
a match here and there. But would you agree with me that the build-up was just sort of abnormally solid for a Raw pay-per-view?
Well, I think they were helped a couple of ways in that regard, in that this wasn't a quick turnaround pay-per-view. You know, I think they had at least, 4 weeks at least, which you know, is quick in historical standards, but sometimes these pay-per-views are coming, you know, 3 weeks. Certainly, you know, Battleground is next week, and, you know, that's a SmackDown show, but it's not like they had to quickly reset and pivot. Okay, you know, we just had SummerSlam, you know, the next Raw show is in, you know, 3 weeks. We have to quickly throw together a bunch of half-baked rematches and, you know, some just random matches on the card. It's like every match on this card had a story. Now, whether those stories were good, you know, whether they were all good is something you can talk about. Certainly, out of all the matches on the show, Wyatt and Rollins felt a bit like an afterthought. But even there, you know, they did the promo segments. They kept them apart physically, which I thought was a nice touch, which, of course, they ruined last night by just going to a random rematch. But, yeah, I thought the storytelling was good in terms of Raw leading up to it. And whenever you can have, you know, Paul Heyman to help you sell a title match, that's what you want. If you have that option, if you can get Paul Heyman on your show to hype your big title main event, that is what you want. And I think probably a lot of your, you know, your good feelings come from Heyman. And then the decent build up that that even Enzo and Cass had, you know, while there were certainly some logical holes in that story, they did a lot with what they were given.
Yeah, and the Enzo and Cass thing, I thought you're right. The build just on the surface is great because, I mean, it's like the old fashioned tag team best friend breakup feud, culminating in a one-on-one match, and this obviously isn't necessarily the end of that, but it played out exactly like it should have at Great Balls of Fire. I mean, it was totally logically sound, which isn't something you can say about a lot of Raw and WWE in general storylines. Like, to me, that's just like the best reflection of why this pay-per-view was successful, because it did what made sense from a professional wrestling standpoint. It told the story that it was required to tell. And you mentioned Bray and Rollins. Right. It was a bit of an afterthought. It probably ranked last in terms of the most interesting things that happened that night. And I think most of us probably thought that would be the case going into it. But the match was fine. It was quick. And the result wasn't like a headache-inducing result. Like, Bray just won. Bray needed a win. Like, he needed a win over somebody of Rollins' stature to sort of stay relevant. I'm not sure what they're going to do with Bray's character. Probably the same thing that they've been doing for the past several years, it's been kind of an aggravating rinse and repeat when it comes to him delivering the same promo and basically doing the same exact feud with everybody that he's had a feud with over the past few years. So I didn't love that they dragged somebody as talented as Rollins into that, but maybe they can go somewhere else a little different with it now. I don't know. But that helps us move into the more interesting portion of the night, which is the rest of the pay-per-view. Would you agree with me that the end zone cast thing played out the way that it only could have or should have?
Well, I want to quickly kind of circle back to sort of the beginning of the card and talking about the Rollins and Bray Wyatt match.
Okay.
And also in there, the Neville and Tozawa match. Both of these matches suffered from a really curious problem that WWE has. They will do the heel finish, and then the announcers won't sell the finish. You know, and Neville won with a low blow, and also, by the way, rest in peace, cruiserweight division, Austin Aries, happy trails. It's done. That was the chance you had, the shot you had. It's over. Whatever there was, it's gone. Anyway, so Neville wins with a low blow. Wyatt wins with the eye poke, and then they don't sell it. They don't do anything with it. The idea behind having, this heel finish is to get Bray Wyatt over as a bad guy. So Michael Cole's response to that should have been, oh, look at Bray Wyatt. You know, he talks tough. He talks about, walking in darkness or whatever mumbo jumbo he's spouting this week. And yet, he has to use a dirty trick like a thumb to the eye to win, That shows you what kind of guy that Bray Wyatt is and shows you why next time he talks tough, you shouldn't believe him. Like, it's the storytelling that they're missing out on. And I think if they had talked more about that, it could have really sold that finish and it could have added, the heel dimension to Wyatt's character that's just not there. I mean, like you said, he does the same promo, the same match, the same feud, and he's got a cool entrance. And so many gimmicks right now in WWE are just, oh, look, it's a cool entrance, and that's it. Bray Wyatt, Naomi, those are like the number one problems in that department that come to mind. There's just no character development to these guys. Anyway, getting on to the better parts of the card, I would have even been happier with a shorter end zone big cast match. I mean, anytime you can make what WWE does look and feel like it's real, I like that. And logically, there's no reason why Enzo Amore should be able to compete in a physical fight with Big Cass. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It's why I hated years ago, any type of match that you would have, say, Rey Mysterio and Big Show or something. It's like, oh, he's so quick, he can cut his legs out, whatever. He'd squash him like a bug if it was a real fight. Like, that's why we have weight divisions in UFC. That's why we have weight divisions in boxing. 9 times out of 10, the bigger guy is going to beat the littler guy. So I would have been happy with a big Buddha Doom and, squashing him. But I thought what they did was absolutely good. That's the story you need to tell. And, I don't think this is really a feud that should continue. I think that's a good chapter. And maybe this continues with Enzo and Big Show, Big Cass and Big Show. I'm sure Vince is like, oh, this is a great next feud for him. Big Show and Big Cass, it just sounds great. Ah. But, you can put Enzo in Show's corner, and ultimately, Enzo Amore's best destiny is as a heel manager. So I hope, and again, this is another logical thing that is a big hole, but I hope eventually it becomes oh yeah, we were in this together from the beginning. I am Enzo Amore, ultimate evil mastermind, and now I will be Big Cass's manager in singles career. But yeah, I thought the match was good, and Enzo has been acting his little tiny heart out, and I have enjoyed this program.
He cried, man.
I
like,
know.
Tears streaming down his face. I mean, that's freaking acting, bro. So, yeah.
We are all Enzo Amore with a single tear sliding down our face as we watch our world burn.
He's been great. It's the best work he's done so far in WWE since their big call-up, obviously. I mean, people were clearly getting a little bit weary of this. Like you mentioned, like, where you have the gimmicks where the entrance is the most interesting thing about certain performers, the same is probably true for Enzo and Cass in terms of, you know, the fans doing the promo along with them, and they've just done that and done that and done that. And I love it every time. I mean, it's fun, but they needed something. And this was obviously the natural progression for the two of them, and they sold it so well, both of them. Both of them have been excellent. And, yeah, he should have squashed him like a bug. And, you know, he did, and it played out fine. And you're right. The logical next step for Enzo is one of three things. And you're right. Like, to be his manager would be perfect. But, you know, if Enzo ends up as an announcer, you know, someday sooner than later, I think that would be great. I mean, if he wants to keep wrestling, throw Enzo and his mic into the cruiserweight division, man. Like, do something with that division. I mean, tossing somebody with that gift would really add an element to the cruiserweight division. I don't know that that's going to happen, but anyway, this was great. And I, you know, on Raw last night, as we're talking about this, Cass's opening promo was really good. His whole "I'm the man, nobody's on my level, I'm going to be on the Tonight Show." You know, that is just really great, classic bad guy stuff. And Cass, and Enzo, for that matter, they really seem to have a really necessary and needed understanding of sort of the pro wrestling traditions that the business seems to sort of forget about when they need them the most. And these guys seem like relatively old school guys who are happy to employ those tropes. And the thing is, it's like, we still really respond to trust like that. And I thought that, you know, this sort of like blood feud rivalry, you know, former family, former partner, tag team, whatever thing, like, that's the stuff we still respond to in pro wrestling, and it's sold incredibly well. So, worked for me.
They call it a machine because it works. I mean, there's no reason why you have to reinvent these things. You know, the current thinking now is like, oh, you can't do heels and faces, and you need shades of gray and complex characters. And, you know, maybe we need to redefine exactly what is a heel and what is a face.
Yeah.
Like, ambulance match, hello, and we'll talk about that. But as a great coach once said, the same things that win are the things that always won. We just have a bunch of different excuses when we can't get ratings anymore. It's just simple, basic storytelling. Connect the dots, dot to dot to dot, and at the end of the last dot is a big money match that people want to see. It ain't hard. It's just wrestling.
Yep.
The stuff should write itself.
And help me out with cards since I'm driving here. Do we move on to the tag team match or the women's match next?
Tag team match.
Okay, so and the tag team match was a lot of fun. And obviously it was on the longer side because it was a sort of mini Iron Man match. And it got really good in its second half, like when the Hardy Boys were working against the clock. And the match ended up being really satisfying. But what should be said here is, like, Cesaro and Sheamus are doing some of the best work they've done in a long time. Obviously, you know, I thought that their best of seven series had its moments for sure, and it's interesting how they've been so connected for so long at this point. But the Hardy Boys are reliable and are fun, and the fans, wow, they really still respond to these guys. But overall, like, tell me what you thought of this match, but what do you think of I guess, just the job that these four guys are doing together?
Well, you know, we talk about old wrestling tropes. One of the classic wrestling tropes is the idea that a match has a time limit. And WWE and professional wrestling in general has really gotten away from that. But, you know, if this was a title match that just was announced, and again, they're not going to do this, but you would have had the same excitement if they had just announced, this is a tag team title match with a standard, 30-minute pinfall, time limit, or however they used to announce it. That racing the clock kind of energy and excitement that you can infuse into, not just an Iron Man match, but if you still had that trope, you could do it in any matches or any of the matches. That was a different kind of energy that they had in that match. I thought it was very good. I wasn't a big fan of that quick, first fall, whatever it was, 10 seconds into the match. I don't like it when, same thing out with their 2 out of 3 falls match where, we present normal wrestling matches and you don't have a fall and until 7 or 8 or 10 minutes in, and let's do a fall at 3 minutes, just because. So that, that kind of exposed the gimmick a little bit, I think. But yeah, that second half of the match was absolutely fire. The Hardys, I think, are doing a great job. I think the Hardy Boys with a Z might be running out of steam, but I think as we saw last night, we are maybe evolving into whatever version of the Broken Universe that they can present in WWE that WWE will let them present, and then I think that will certainly give their act more legs. And then eventually, to finish up their run, you want to see what you can do with them as singles acts. But I think in terms of a 2017 return to WWE, I think they're doing great in their timeline and what they can do and what they should do. And Sheamus and Cesaro are a really solid tag team at this point. Again, you don't see them doing the sort of heel stuff that you would expect. It's weird that you don't have them, cutting promos as often as I think they should. But it's a problem with the tag teams generally. They don't get the kind of mic time that they should. I know when the Dudley boys were back for a cup of coffee, Bubba Dudley, who was great at promos, had maybe one. And it was nice to see him nice for the Hardys to get some mic time last night. And then I was intrigued by the developments with the Revival, and again, the question of whether they're going to be off into the Broken Universe now. But we shall see.
Yeah, and thank God the Revival still exists. Because, they just kind of showed up and flat out disappeared. And those guys have been so overdue in terms of being ready for the big leagues. Like, I'm just ready to see those guys go to work. So, yeah, can't wait. And so, does this move us to the women's match?
Yes.
Yeah, so how confusing, I know, and confounding it must be for so many fans, and probably for WWE too, that Bayley has just been such a bust on this level. And, the fault probably lies within WWE and just not really understanding what to do with her. I'm not sure, but the Alexa Bliss Bayley feud was just as flat a feud as we've seen, not only in this division, but just sort of in general. So it sucked that didn't work out because, I thought Alexa Bliss especially played it really well, played her role really well with the material that she was given. And the material obviously wasn't great. And they, they did what they could with it and it just didn't work. But, and so I'm glad at least that they kept Alexa Bliss champion and she was given an opportunity to work with Sasha in this first big match between the two of them, I thought was fantastic. Like, I know that people have had their trepidations about Bliss in ring for whatever reason. I think she's been pretty solid. I thought she was really good on SmackDown and one of the highlights of that brand before she came over. And it's just, she's just one of the best bad guys working in the company right now. She just really gets it. Her mannerisms are great. She's fantastic on the mic. I think her psychology in the ring is top notch, and she just understands it. And it had translated so beautifully in what was an unexpectedly physical match between her and Sasha. Not unexpected because of Sasha, because she keeps taking one vicious bump after the other, and it's no less unsettling anytime you see her do it. But man, when she went from the out right outside of the ropes and just smack her back or head on the ring apron in that match, like, it was freaking scary again. So she's amazing. Like, she just keeps winning me over in terms of what she is, in terms of how special she is as a bump taker, if not just a performer in general. But do you agree with me that this, other than, again, like, the highlight sort of echoing what we just saw from the Usos in terms of, like, the bad guy being okay with the count out, retaining the belt, obviously, outside of the slightly wonky finish, in my opinion, I thought this was one of the best matches of the night.
Oh, definitely. And certainly I've developed a new respect for Bliss and her in-ring work after watching, I don't know, 3 Naomi and Lana matches over the past, month or so. And I hope to God we don't have to see another one of those. But yeah, I thought they did a great job. You talked about, Sasha Banks just having those killer looking bumps and then selling so well. And I think, I was fine with the Usos getting that count out win, because I think they sold it a little bit better than Bliss. Like, if you're gonna do that, you need to be really, really over the top with it. Like, yeah, almost kind of the old time mustache twirling variety.
Yeah.
Sniveling and conniving. Maybe they just didn't have time on the show to linger on Bliss like that, or maybe I just wasn't keyed into it. But I thought I was a little more satisfied with the Usos. This finish felt a little cheaper, but on the whole, I can't complain with it, or I can't complain about it. If they had done another eye poke finish and then not sold it well enough, I would have been more upset with that. Like, I'm more cheesed at Wyatt, Rollins, Neville, Tozawa, those finishes, than I am this finish.
Yeah, so looking forward to seeing any sort of follow-up matches between these two. I think they're really at the height of women's wrestling right now in terms of overall performances. And again, going back to those tropes that we like and respond to, I think Alexa Bliss is a really good example of that. So looking forward to seeing more from her. Is I wrong, or is the IC title match next?
That is indeed next. The one thing I'll say about this match, and I thought it was perfectly fine, this is the feud that seems like it won't end.
Yeah.
I don't know why you bring both Miz and Ambrose from SmackDown to Raw, and then you pretty much go right into a feud for them on Raw. Like, I want to see different things from both of these guys, and maybe this is part of something that gets to, as we saw last night, some kind of mini Shield reunion. But, it's just something kind of lowering everyone involved once you get in Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. And I think adding them to the Miz's gimmick is fine, but the idea that Dean Ambrose needs Seth Rollins to help him overcome Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel is a little bit diminishing. But I'm just ready for both these guys to move on.
Yep.
What exactly that is, I don't know. But I think the match was fine. The storytelling was fine. I'm done. I want something new from these guys.
100% agree with you. They both need something new. And The Miz, if anybody has, the guy's earned something else. You know, like he's been doing the Ambrose feud for so long at this point, and he's been so good while doing it that the guy, he needs to keep climbing rungs within the company, and whatever the next thing is for him, like, just make it worth his time and worth his talent right now, because I still think he's the best on the mic in WWE right now, and I think there's more ways to utilize that than just more matches with Ambrose. And I think that, you know, I like Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel fine, but I think that honestly adding them to the whole Miz-tourage thing, I think it kind of cheapens the Miz a little bit because he's not needed them and been fine without them. And Maurice as his help and as his sort of sniveling bad guy manager here works perfectly. Like, you don't really need that. He doesn't need that help because Maurice sort of like gets him out of any jam. She can get him out of any jam that she needs to. So I don't think there's much to say about the match in general other than, like, I guess it was necessary to have an IC title match, but the same one we've seen for so long that it does get a little tiring. But I like the finish. I like the performance from both of the guys. It's just kind of sad that WWE obviously has no idea what to do with Bo Dallas or Curtis Axel, you know, other than releasing them. And I certainly don't want to see them released. I want to see them performing in one capacity or another. I just don't think this is the right thing. And obviously the Social Outcast wasn't the right thing, and whatever the hell else they were doing. I kind of wish that Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel had feuded back when Bo Dallas was Mr. Happy Motivational Guy and Curtis Axel was like sort of like unhinged, just like pissed off guy. That would have been great, but we're long past that, and it's still a big head-scratcher for both of them.
Yeah, and I actually liked the segment last night. I thought Curtis Axel did a really great job, and that's not something you often say about his promos. Like, yeah, he just had this, like, this nice kind of glow about him, and, like, I wasn't exactly sure why I should, you know, boo that or feel resentment toward him. But I think Raw generally, and we can move on after this point, Raw generally has sort of an IC title level gap in the card. Yeah, if you look at the top of the card, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, like, you don't really look at any of those guys and think, oh, yeah, you know, they need to go into an IC title feud. It's weird that Finn Balor didn't wrestle on the show last night, and it's weird that any match that he would have had would have been against, what's-his-face, Elias Samson. And so they have a very crowded top of the card, and then you have guys like Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas and guys you don't ever see on TV that fill out the house show roster, but there's nothing in that reasonable middle. So I think maybe you need to elevate The Miz to the world universal title scene. You know, give him credible opponents at that level, and then let guys like, you know, Apollo Crews fight over the IC title. Like, you're
right.
You're not going to be able to successfully build this card and make it all work. So keep the guys at the top strong and do your best with the guys at the bottom, and don't have Finn Balor just not be on TV because you don't have anything better for him to do.
The IC title is sort of traditionally, obviously, an enhancement belt in terms of settling on a guy who is the future of the company, perhaps a future world title guy and a hot commodity that fans love or hate. And yeah, so, I mean, The Miz, he's a fine IC champion. You know, I think he's done a great job with the belt. I mean, but he headlined WrestleMania as a former world champion, and he's done so great with the IC belt and making it important again. Let him move on. I mean, God, can you imagine, like, if we consider Brock Lesnar a good guy, can you imagine The Miz versus Paul Heyman, like, in promo battles, and, like, The Miz talking to Brock Lesnar and the potential that he would have there? I mean, not necessarily they're the perfect two to feud with one another. I think The Miz is just that entertaining and that good on television that he needs to be at that level. So.
Yeah, and that would be, again, to return to the classic idea of professional wrestling, you would want to keep those guys apart for, you know, a month, and it wouldn't be a match that you could headline a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam with, but for a Raw brand show for, you know, Great Balls of Fire Part 2, if those guys had been apart for a month, if they hadn't touched, you know, fingers, hands, and have Miz be 1,000% more obnoxious somehow than he already is, and you're just dying to see him, you know, get his butt kicked, like, I would watch that. And they need to be in that mindset of, okay, you know, what would be a match that people would want to see? What's a match where people would want to see somebody get beat up, which is, I think, a nice segue into the ambulance match. We definitely need to start rethinking our approach with The Miz and what we do with the IC title for Raw right now.
Yeah, and that we'll let that bring us to the ambulance match. That when Braun Strowman comes out and says, "I challenge you to an ambulance match," like, I was like, "What? What's an ambulance match? I mean, is this like an old Mid-South thing?" Or, like, I can't recall ever seeing one. And, you know, I guess the concept is basically the same as most other gimmick matches. You lock them in a casket, or you lock them in a blank, and that's the end of the match. Okay, whatever, you know. And as long as, you know, as long as Braun stays as red hot as he's been, and this feud stays as good as it is, whatever, do whatever gimmick match you want to do. So the build to this has been great. Braun has been fantastic, and he's still a huge crowd favorite. And Reigns has been, I think, equally good and equally strong, and is getting the reaction Reigns is getting. The boos were amazing on Sunday night. And I thought that when this match was in and near the ring, it was great. And the physicality was brutal. And when Reigns would just hit him with those chair shots, and Braun would just absorb him with his elbow, when he snatched the chair and just starts manhandling Roman, like, that's when the match, to me, was at its peak and was when it was great. And then they start moving away towards the ramp and towards the Titantron. I personally just don't love it when matches, like, turn into street brawls where they go backstage or whatever. I like for the match to be in and around the ring as much as possible. So I don't really understand why you can't park the ambulance right next to the ring. I guess Roman has to drive it out and do that weird skit that they ended up doing.
Oh, we will get you that.
Yeah, but did you enjoy this match?
You know, the whole program suffers from this fundamental misconception of Roman Reigns as a guy that we can book as a babyface that is perfectly logical to position him as a babyface, and yet 75% of the fan base, even being generous to Vince McMahon, 65% of the fan base does not want to see it. They are not enthralled with Roman Reigns as a typical hero. He doesn't act like a typical hero. And so we're stuck doing this weird meta dance of, like, yeah, Braun Strowman is great. And yet I'm supposed to boo him because that's what Vince McMahon is telling me to do. But Roman Reigns is a jerk, and he continues to act like a jerk, but I'm supposed to cheer him. So I'm just stuck. And that, those sort of gymnastics are just not fun to deal with. I enjoyed the match. That spot where Strowman just starts no-selling chair shots, as long as you do that strategically and you don't come back to that spot, and Braun Strowman is the only guy who does that spot, I think it's great. as long as you don't devalue the chair shot generally. I thought it was fantastic. His facial expressions, as always, are perfect. His look is perfect. He's great. I got no complaints about Braun Strowman. I absolutely, as a guy who is not behind the Roman Reigns babyface push, I absolutely 100% love the finish of that match. Not the gimmick slash angle, but I loved the finish of the match that Roman Reigns, you know, like Wile E. Coyote'd his way out of that, that match. It was perfect. I stood up, I laughed, I cheered, I clapped. Like, it was great. And because Roman Reigns is a heel, whatever Vince McMahon says, whatever the announcers say, and we're certainly going to get into talking about the post-match angle, but I thought they got closer than they ever have been before in terms of painting Roman Reigns as a heel using the announcers. I loved that finish. It was spectacularly funny and probably one of my most favorite finishes of the last, two or three years, in terms of I want a guy to lose in the most humiliating way possible, and did.
Yeah. And to just let's jump into the post-match thing. Roman Reigns, this would-be company good guy, like the guy who's the next John Cena and future of the company, definitely 100% tried to murder Braun Strowman and then left the scene of the accident. So I just, like, unless this is like your biggest opportunity for a double turn in a long time, in probably what should have happened, the optics of this are just so strange in terms of what you want Roman Reigns to be and then what you're selling him as with a move like that. Because am I wrong, or did he not try to murder Braun Strowman?
Yeah, and he murdered him because he was pissed off that he lost the match.
Right, he's a sore loser, too.
Yeah, I was tweeting on my personal account during the show, and I was talking with some people, and it's like, Roman Reigns had a bad day at work, and he just tried to murder a coworker. That's not a heroic thing to do. And even the positioning of Braun Strowman, I was talking with my wife about the finish, and, she thought that, Braun Strowman wasn't necessarily heroic, and I think that's a fine position. I'm not going to disagree with my wife, who can't respond on this here podcast. But at the end of the day, 75 years of professional wrestling say that was a double turn. And the heel side is stronger for Reigns. And, the announcers talking about him as being unhinged and kind of going too far. I think they could have definitely made this a double turn and it would have stuck if the announcers had turned it up just a little bit more. But at the end of the day, you want to see a baby face stand tall. You want him to be a hero. You want him to be heroic. And Braun Strowman climbed his broken bleep out of an ambulance and refused medical attention, and he basically skulked off like a dog to die in the woods. Like, that, it was a heroic thing
after winning and clean.
I don't know what they're trying to do here. What I suspect happens is that Braun returns next week and costs Reigns the number one contendership. And then I don't know what you do at SummerSlam with these guys, but I think that's the logical place to go. I don't think anybody really wants Reigns beating Brock right now, if ever. And I think we definitely want some more Brock and Samoa Joe. But I just what they're trying to do with Reigns, what they did with Reigns Sunday, doesn't make any sense in 2017. I understand in the Attitude Era, you know, trademark symbol, that you could do more of this stuff. You know, Stone Cold dropped Triple H, you know, into a limo explosion or something. I remember that angle. But it was a crazier time. Stone Cold was a crazier babyface. And he had a history of that stuff. Roman Reigns doesn't. And Roman Reigns doesn't have a tenth of the babyface connection with the fans that Stone Cold Steve Austin had. So whatever you, however you try to defend it as a babyface move, if you want to try to defend, well, Braun Strowman is the monster among men. He's the zombie you can't kill. Like, that's why he's a monster. That's why he's scary. Just stop. Just quit. So I hope that they'll start to lean into this more, to lean in more into Strowman being cheered and doing more of these ridiculous feats of strength, you know, more ambulance tipping and that sort of thing. And then they just please, for the love of God, go with what the audience wants. Because guess what? They will buy just as much Braun Strowman merch as they are Roman Reigns merch. If you give it to them, they will tune in to see a network special where Braun Strowman, you know, just whips Roman Reigns all across every arena in America. They'll watch it. Give the people what they want, and they will come to you.
Yeah, and let's move on to the main event, because that's kind of what they tried to do here in giving fans what many consider a dream match in Brock Lesnar versus Samoa Joe, this match that people envisioned for a long time. Like, I think there's a lot of people out there who never thought they would see this specific match. And talk about a great buildup in a relatively short amount of time. Brock versus Joe, and sprinkled with some Paul Heyman in there, it's been fantastic. I think aside from a pretty wonky split-screen interview thing they did on the Raw before this, for the most part, probably predominantly thanks to Joe and what I can only imagine were some of his ideas, I think this build was really good, and I bought it completely, and I couldn't wait for this match. And that's typically the case for any Brock Lesnar match. I can't wait to see, like, A, just him in the ring, and B, sort of how he treats his opponent, you know? And you never know what the level of respect is between Brock and his opponents, but you see if they're not very creative in the ring, then you can put two and two together and you see what their chemistry is like. And I think the chemistry between Joe and Brock was just so natural and good leading up to this that I expected a pretty solid match. And I think the match was pretty solid. And the length of it was decent enough, even for a main event. I mean, Brock he wrestles in short matches most of the time, and it was good to see him go a little longer than I guess we're used to, especially since the Goldberg feud. But go ahead.
I was just groaning at the idea that there was a Brock Lesnar, Bill Goldberg
right.
feud
it,
at one point.
It happened.
I'm trying to forget.
Yeah, no, it happened. But I think that the match itself was really good. I loved the offense that Joe got on Brock, that first announcer table spot to start things off, even before the bell rang. Really good, and I just loved it. The only thing about this, I thought the finish was a little abrupt. I don't mind that Brock won. He probably should have won, but I say, you know, it's a fantasy book here a little bit. I think Joe should kick out of that first F5. We should get at least one more little sequence between the two of them, and if Brock has to F5 him again to win it, fine. So, I'm nitpicking here. I think the finish was a little abrupt, but for the most part, another solid match.
Well, I will disagree with you here, and I think it makes sense if you want to do a rematch, which, again, I hope is where they're going. You can sell that finish, and I think they tried to do that last night, as Joe being caught for second. You know, if you remember back to that Alabama-Georgia SEC championship game, you know, if Georgia had another play, if they had been able to you know, spike the ball or whatever and get that last touchdown, they win. If Joe avoids that F5, if he gets the choke in all the way the first time, you know, in 30 seconds, the match is over. If they do as what you're suggesting, if Samoa Joe kicks out of an F5 and then they have another sequence and, you know, he has to F5 him again, I think that story is more of a, well, Joe fought really hard, but Brock is just better. And I think you can tell that story of Joe had 1 second. One slip up, you're never going to see Samoa Joe take an F5 again. You are going to see Brock Lesnar get choked the F out. I think you can tell that story. And if anybody can tell that story, it would be Paul Heyman. And you saw that last night with, you know, Paul Heyman going over the top like, oh, you're never going to see Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar again. Never, 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 never. And then wisely, expertly, Joe steps in there and says, that's you being afraid. And Joe, I will say, is the type of nuanced character that I'm okay with. He acts mean and tough, and he will cheat. You know, you got the low blow in. But then there's also this sense that, okay, you really respect him. He is a real fighter. And, you know, you got to respect his skills. And Brock always, Brock too is that kind of character where, okay, is he a face? Is he a heel? He certainly has, or I think you can say that Paul Heyman, certainly has some heelish tendencies, especially, you know, last night when it looked like he was trying to beg out of a rematch. So, I liked the finish. I liked the match. I liked Lesnar retaining. I would have been happy with Joe winning the belt, although certainly knowing how WWE books, it wasn't expecting it, but you thought, okay, maybe this is going to happen. And really, that's the sign of a good wrestling match, where you think, okay, maybe this can happen. I'm going to get excited. You feel like you're watching a real sporting event. So, on the strength of the Lesnar Joe match, I think Great Balls of Fire was a success. I think the ambulance match and the nonsense angle, although I will say the Hawkins Slater match, in terms of selling the angle, I really enjoyed that because, again, I like when WWE tries to, you know, make this like a sports presentation. And I absolutely believe that a real wrestling event, if you had something like that happen, absolutely, they'd send two guys out there. It's like, oh, go have a match. We got to sort this thing out. We can't have the title match yet. Go fill some time in the ring. Go, go, go. And they absolutely presented it like that. And I really loved the idea of Heath Slater getting on the card, but Heath Slater getting a win and then it not being on screen. So A-plus for Brock and Joe, just a fart noise for the booking of Roman Reigns. So that brings it down to my A-minus.
Okay, well, I'll take J-minus. I mean, it's just good to hear the power of positivity just rolling through your blood right now as a result of Great Balls of Fire, and they set a pretty high bar for future Balls of Fire events. So I don't know if they're going to retain that name or what moving forward. They probably just should. Why not? They already started it.
Lean into it, boys. Lean into it.
Damn right. All right, Devin, I think we're good here. Thanks for taking some time to talk this through. It's just good to sit here and talk for an hour about what all we liked about a WWE pay-per-view. It feels good, don't it?
It sure does. Need more of it. I will say I don't think we're going to be having the same kind of conversation after Battleground, but maybe they'll surprise me.
All right. Well, sounds good. Professor Dr. Will Nevin, we'll talk soon.
Always a pleasure.
Rammer Slammer is produced and edited by Ben Flanagan for the Alabama Media Group and AL.com. Find us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Rammer Slammer. Thanks for listening.